let's get to Luke chapter 12 again this morning. We start a new series in the new year here looking at the kingdom life. What's it mean to follow after Christ and to live a life for him and for his kingdom? And he's walking his disciples through that in a series of teachings here as he's headed towards Jerusalem in this section of Luke. And so we're going to dig into that again today. Luke 12, 22 through 34 is going to be our passage this morning, talking about nothing to worry about, as Jesus is going to press us on this topic of worry a little bit. So Courtney and I, when we first got married, our honeymoon was to the Smoky Mountains. And so we got a cabin up on the side of this mountain, and we were there for the week, and it was great. And we went out one night for dinner, and we were headed back to the cabin. And as we were headed back, Courtney really had to go to the bathroom. And so, you know, just like any new, loving, caring husband who has this amazing new bride, I was doing what all husbands would do when her wife is in need. I was swerving the car back and forth, trying to shake her bladder on the way back to the cabin and annoy her. And so we were going up the side of this mountain on this curvy road, and I'm being crazy. And we come around this bend, and a car is coming at us in the opposite lane. And so I swerve the car back over into our lane where we should have been. And unfortunately, on that side of the road, there was this really steep ditch. And as I swerved back over, my tires caught the edge of the pavement and sucked us down nose first into this ditch, coming about, you know, 6 inches from hitting a giant telephone pole. Needless to say, kind of ruined the evening. Okay, that's like the vibe was kind of shot at that point. But it was a good reminder that sometimes there are ditches around us that we need to be aware of. And that's what we're seeing here in this text right now here in Luke, is that last week, Jesus warned us about one ditch on one side of the road. Today, he's going to talk about the other ditch on the other side of the road. So if you think about our financial lives, as we're heading down the road following Jesus, there's these two major ditches that we can fall into. The one last week we talked about was covetousness, right? Saying, I don't have enough. I want more. I want more. I want more. That's one side of the financial ditch. The other one today he's going to touch on is worry. That I won't have enough, right? Worried that I'm going to run out, that I'm not going to have enough to provide for me or for my family, that worry side of our financial lives. And so that's where we're headed today. And so this is the big question over our text this morning. Does what I treasure bring worry or worship? Does what I treasure bring worry or worship? So go ahead and look at the text with me. We're going to start in verse 22. It says, and he said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on, for your life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens, they neither sow nor reap, and they have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you are not able to do a small thing, to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? So the first thing in the text this morning, number one, don't worry about your life. That's what Jesus says here, right? Don't worry about your life, which is a really strange statement to many of us. But notice before we even get to that, he starts off, it says, he said to his disciples. So he's kind of turning the corner here. In the last passage, he was kind of talking more. He was responding to this guy's, you know, question or comment, and he was talking more to the crowd. Now he's talking specifically to his people, his disciples, his followers that have committed to him as their Lord. And so this right here, these words are directed at us, the disciples of Christ, those who are in the church, who are following after him. This goes right at the heart of us as his people. We're going to see that later on repeated in this passage as he refers to God as our Father, right? Not everybody gets to make that claim. That's us. That's church. That's followers of Jesus. He's also going to refer to us, or the disciples here, as his little flock that he's shepherding. So this is very much him talking to those who have committed to him and to follow him with their lives in his kingdom. And he says this to them. He says, disciples, do not be anxious or worried about your life. Specifically, what you will eat or what you will wear. Now, this is really interesting to me because what is the one thing that every single person thinks about and probably to some degree worries about every single day, multiple times a day. What we're going to eat, right? Like that's just a, like it's on our mind a lot, is it not? Like we're, and you know, like we're going to have for breakfast, what we're going to have for lunch, what we're going to have for dinner. Like it's, we worry, we think about this, we put a lot of time and attention on this a lot. Now granted, most of us are not worried about if we're going to eat, right? Maybe some, but most of us, that, it's more like what are we going to eat, which is actually a whole other level of what Jesus is getting at here. I think this plays into, you know, the most dreaded question for every mother is, hey, mom, what's for dinner, right? Like, because we're just always thinking about it. So he says, don't worry about what you're going to eat. And he says, don't worry about what you're going to wear. Now, this one hits some of us more than others, right? Some of us care less about that. But you still have to make a decision. You still have to figure out, right? For work, for church, for this activity, for that, like, what am I going to wear? There's some thought. There's some process going in there. It made me think about it this week. There was a interview I heard years ago of Steve Jobs. You guys know Steve Jobs, the founder, one of the founders of Apple and led the company for a long time. If you know anything about Steve Jobs, he wore the exact same outfit every day. This like iconic long sleeve black t-shirt with jeans. Like that was every day. Richest man, one of the richest men in the world at that time, the same basic outfit every single day. And they asked him why, and he said, it's because that gives me one less decision I have to make each day. And then I can give that mental energy to more important things. Right? That's Jesus' point right here when he's telling us not to worry about food or what we're going to wear. That not that those things, he's not telling you to like starve yourself or walk around naked. Okay, that's not the point. I think we kind of implicitly get that. What he's saying is like, hey, there are more important things that you should be giving your mind, your energy, your thought life to than these really basic, simple things that don't matter in the end. He says, don't worry about these things and how you're going to survive in this life. He says, because life is more than food and clothing. He's saying, yeah, these things are necessary, right? I'm not saying they're not necessary, but even though they're real needs, there's more to life than these simple pleasures that we give so much time and attention to. One of the commentators I was reading this week, he said it like this. He said, living is more than having. Living is more than having. And yet we reduce it so often to worrying about what we have and what we don't have. I think we see and we experience this most tangibly in sickness. Like when you're sick, like when you're like really sick, like in the bed, not getting up, kind of sick, what are you not worried about in those moments? Right? You're not worried about what you're wearing. You're not worried probably about what you're eating because you don't want to eat anything. You're just, because you're sick. Especially if it's a life-threatening illness. And even if it's not you, maybe it's a family member or a friend or someone you care about. When life is on the line, you are not thinking about where your next meal is coming from. Because in those moments, there's some clarity that comes to our hearts and to our minds that there is more to this life. There are more important things than the simple, what am I going to eat and what am I going to wear? What do I have and what I don't have? Those things kind of fade into the background. Jesus continues on. He says, consider the ravens. I don't know why Jesus is always talking about birds, but he seems to like be like, I don't know, maybe he was a birder. I don't know, like, but this is like a thing. He says, consider the ravens. They don't sow or reap or store up food. Now, Jesus is not emphasizing their laziness, okay? This isn't about encouraging us to be idle or lazy in this life. That's not what he's saying. He's pointing out that despite the fact that these birds, these animals, cannot earn anything. They can't earn a living, right? They can't go out and produce their own food. They can't control what they're going to have or not have. And yet, they're not worried. They're never worried about not having enough, even though they have no ability or control over what they're will be provided for them. One commentator I was reading again this week, he said this way, he says, they don't worry about where the worms will come from, but they also don't expect the worms to just crawl into their beaks, right? There's this give and take, like, yes, they're going to go out and they have to go out and get the food and feed themselves, but they're not worried about if there's going to be enough or where it's going to come from. Furthermore, he says they don't have a pantry, right, all stocked up with food in their nests and all that kind of stuff. They don't, or worse yet, they don't have a prepper stash in the basement, right, just in case something goes haywire. They're not worried about where their food's going to come from because God feeds them. Because they never go hungry. And then he says, how much more valuable are you to God than those birds? This is one of Jesus' famous lesser to greater arguments. We see this all the time in the Gospels. He's like, if he takes care of them, how much more will he take care of you? These insignificant birds, he takes care of them, and you are his own child. How much more will he care for you? Jesus calling them to see and to remember and to trust in the faithfulness of God to provide, rather than worry about how they're going to make it. But he keeps going. He says, and which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? Now, that kind of sounds like a crazy concept, like adding hours to my life. But if we kind of zoom out, like, that's actually a major emphasis in our world, isn't it? Extending our lives, right? Healthier diets, regular exercise, supplements, medicines, medical procedures, all these like holistic like things to try to be healthy, to try to extend our lives. That's the whole point of all those things, right? Do they work? I don't know. I do know this. Psalm 139 says that God is the one who ordains every day of my life before it ever begins. That he is in control of when I live and when I die, period. Which is Jesus' point right here. He's like, you can't extend your life. You don't have that power. And especially not by worrying about it. In fact, I love it when science lines up, when they do like a study, and they're like, oh, we figured out this new thing. And we're like, oh, yeah, the Bible already said that, by the way. God already told us that. Every study on stress and anxiety, it shows that it actually shortens our lifespans, not extends them. He says, you can't extend your life by worrying about anything. He says, if you can't do such a small thing as that, which, like, we're like, small thing? seems like a really big thing. And God's like, no, it's a small thing for me. I can do that without even blinking. He says, if you can't do such a small thing as this, why would you worry about the rest? If you don't have enough power and control to even extend your life for an hour, why are you worried about your food and your clothing? The simple things, the basic things. Because here's the contrast. If God is able to control the span of our lives, how much more can he provide everything we need? If he can do this greater thing, he can obviously do the smaller thing. Jesus is saying, don't worry about your life because you can trust in the provision of your God. Now, real talk this morning. Like, this right here, this is hard for me, right? You've probably heard it said before, like, some people, They eat to live. Other people live to eat, right? The second one, that's our family. Okay, like we love some food. Every time we get together, like we're having like good food. Like it's kind of built around that whole experience. When we plan vacations, part of the big part of that's like, okay, where are we going to eat? Right? Like what do they got? What restaurants are along the way? We're plotting out the route. Like this is a big deal. We think about food a lot because we like it. We love it. It's actually a full confession. This week, I was literally in the middle of studying this passage, writing this sermon, and all of a sudden this thought popped in my head, and I grabbed my phone and I texted my wife and I said, "Hey, did the grocery store have my favorite cookies when you went earlier today?" And they did not. And it was like a big bummer, okay, like at that moment. Like I was thinking about it while I was working on this. This is why oftentimes fasting, the idea of fasting is so hard for us. Because we're always thinking about food. We're always like we love it. We do. And what's crazy is that is even a step beyond what Jesus is actually talking about here. He's not talking about being worried about what we will eat or how good it will be, but rather if we will get to eat. If we'll have enough food to eat at all. Which again, isn't a problem for most of us, although it is a big problem for many across the world, and some even in our own country. Jesus is telling us, actually if you look closely, he's actually commanding us not to worry about these things in our lives because God will provide everything that we need. Don't worry about your life because you are valuable to God. That's what we have to remember. The reason we don't have to worry is because God values you more than even the rest of creation. And he's not going to let you go without. He continues on in this teaching here with another illustration. Look at verse 27. He says, "Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, and yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried, for all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." Point number two is trust God to provide. Trust God to provide. He points again to another illustration, the lilies, the flowers. He's like, look at the flowers, right? They can't do anything to clothe themselves, right? They cannot make themselves have any more or any less. And yet they got more swag than Solomon out here. Like the richest guy who ever lived, the flowers look better than he did. And by the way, they're here today and they're gone tomorrow. Right? They're going to get burned up. The thought here is in Jerusalem and the area where Jesus is teaching right here in Galilee, like they didn't have a whole lot of trees. Like wood was kind of a scarcity. And so when they had to cook in the oven or when they had to do something like that, they would sometimes get dried grass and things like that to put in the oven in order to cook with. So he's like, hey, they're gonna be burned up in the oven tomorrow. He's stressing the extreme temporary nature of these flowers, and yet God clothes them with more beauty than anyone. How much more will he clothe you, his beloved children? So you don't need to worry. You don't need to worry. He will take care of you. And then he says, "Oh, you of little faith." Ouch. Notice here, Jesus connects worry and faith. as opposites. Because worry, and we really get down to the root of it, worry is failing to believe that God is in control. That he's in control in general, and that specifically he's in control of my life. It's failing to believe that he is still on the throne, ruling and reigning over all of creation, and that he is who he says he is, a good, benevolent God who provides for his own. When I worry, I am saying, I don't believe you, God. I don't believe. I don't believe you're good. I don't believe you're powerful. I don't believe you're going to do what you said you're going to do. That's worry. And it's proof, Jesus says, of little faith. Not no faith, little faith. And then he tags this. He says, do not seek what you are to eat and drink. And that do not seek, that is an emphasis. That's a strong emphasis in the Greek there. He is giving a direct command to his disciples. Do not seek what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, what you're going to wear, the things of this world. Again, he's not saying we don't eat or we don't clothe ourselves. What he's really saying is don't set your heart on those things. That's another translation of that phrase. Don't set your heart on these simple things of the world. They are not a major priority in your life. Don't be worried about these things. He says, why? He says, for all the nations of the world seek after these things. He's making a comparison here. He's like, that's what they do. That's not what we do. Right? And we see this, we experience this in the world that we live in, and those who do not know Christ, they are consumed with their own needs and desires. And not just for survival, right? Let's just be honest. For comfort, for entertainment, for status, for power, for pleasure. People get so worked up, so anxious over the things of this world. And what they have or what they don't have. They get worried about missing out on the latest thing, the latest trend, and everybody's got to get in there and get it before somebody else and be the first one to be on the front line of that. Or compete for the best options, right? There's limited supply, there's limited seats, there's limited, so I got to get in there and get it before anybody else because I got to have the good stuff. Or hoarding resources in fear of not having enough. Right? Anybody remember the TP crisis of COVID? Like, because we're worried. We're worried about the things of this world. Jesus says, if you're a follower of me, if you're one of mine, you don't have to live like that. You don't have to live like them. And he tells us why. He says, because you have God as your Father. And he knows what you need. The comparison here is, if you're not a follower of Jesus Christ, you do not have God as your Father. Which means you do not have someone promising to provide for you. So it makes sense that the world would worry about these things because they don't have that promise. They don't have that Father that's saying, yeah, I got you. But that's not us. We have a perfect, loving, gracious Father who has promised to provide everything that we need. So he says, you don't have to worry like they worry. Instead, he says, seek his kingdom, and all these things will be added to you. That command right there, and again, in the original language, is in the present tense, meaning it's a continual action. It could be translated, keep seeking his kingdom. Like over and over and over again, keep setting your heart on him and on his kingdom. Keep pursuing his presence and his rule and his ways in your life. Keep seeking and serving to live for the king and not for yourself. Don't seek, he said, do not seek the things of this world. Seek him and his kingdom. But before we can start seeking, first, we have to be believing. The seeking is the outcome. It's what flows from a belief that Jesus is who he says he is. It starts with the gospel taking root in our hearts. And us saying, yes, I know I'm a sinner. I know I've rebelled against God. I know I deserve death and hell and all those things. And yet, God loved me so much that he sent his only son, Jesus Christ, to come to be born as a man, live a perfect and sinless life, and then go to the cross on my behalf. He took the death that I deserved. He stood in my place. He bore my sin, and he went into the grave, and 3 days later, he rose back to life, proving that he was God, and then offering me a chance to be saved. Saved from my sin, and, as we're talking about here, brought into the kingdom of God. Brought into the family of God. It's not just a saving from, it's a saving to something. He's bringing us in to make us a part of this family so that we can trust in the Lord. And if we trust in him, if we seek him and seek his kingdom, he promises all these other things, all the things that you need will be added to you. God will take care of it. You don't have to worry if you seek him first. And then he tags on this. He says, fear not, little flock. It is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. I love that phrase because it reminds us that this isn't just a transactional relationship. It's not just because I said I believe and because I'm surrendering to Jesus, now he has to give me all these things. This isn't just some contract that we're signing that obligates him to then give us stuff. This is a relationship that we're entering into where he is the father and we are the child. And as any father, he loves to give good gifts to his children. It is his good pleasure to provide everything that we need. He loves to give us all of it, himself, his kingdom, and our basic needs. The Lord loves to give to those who trust in him. You know, giving gifts has always been a thing that's just kind of like something I've just loved to do. Like even when I was younger, like I love giving gifts to people and like seeing them get to enjoy the thing. But like that reached another level when I became a dad. Like I'm just telling you, like giving gifts to my kids is like the best, right? So much so that like Courtney has to kind of like keep an eye on me at times because I can get a little bit out of hand, especially around Christmas. Like things can get a little crazy at our house. And so we have long had this four gift rule for Christmas. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that means each person gets four gifts, and they all come in from a different category. And so we've had this for a long time, so we're trying to like, you know, make sure that we're not, you know, being crazy and spoiling them too much and all that kind of stuff. But I'm always looking for a workaround, to be honest, with the four gift thing. Like I'm like, okay, like yeah, it's four gifts, but if I can get all seven items into one box, that's one gift, right? That's just one of the four, right? And then like we can do something in another box and that's one of the four. Or like if we get a family gift, that's for everybody, right? So that doesn't really count as one of the four. And so then that's on top of that thing. And then stockings, like you gotta have stockings Christmas morning before presents. And so I'm just like stuffing as much as I can into the stockings. And because I love giving gifts to my kids. I love blessing them. I love seeing that in them. And God's the same way with us. As a father, he loves it. He loves it. But again, that's still even kind of another level above what this is talking about right here. Right? As a father, I would do whatever it takes to make sure that my kids had what they needed, right? I'm not talking about the extra stuff. I'm talking about to make sure that they had food and a place to live and all. Like, I would do whatever it takes to make sure that they're provided for. And I have throughout the years. And so they know. They don't have to worry if they're going to get to eat today. They don't have to worry if they're going to have a place to sleep tonight. Like, they know they're going to be provided for. They've come to trust in me because I have been faithful to provide for them all these years. So they are not worried about those things. That's what Jesus is saying right here. Your Father loves you, and he has proven that he is faithful to provide for you all these years. So why are you worried? Why are you worried? Your Father loves you. He values you. And he has proven that he will provide everything that you need. So trust in him and seek his kingdom, and the rest will be taken care of. Trust God to provide because your Father loves you too much not to. He loves you too much to not take care of whatever you need. But then look at these last couple verses here in this section. Verse 33, it says, sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Lastly, number three, put your money where your heart is. Put your money where your heart is. In this final couple verses here, Jesus lays out what it actually looks like to seek his kingdom. Like, he's told us, hey, don't see the things of the world, seek his kingdom, and now he's going to tell us exactly how to do that. Three things, okay? How do we seek the kingdom rather than the things of this world? Three ways. Number one, be generous, not greedy. That's where it starts. He says, be generous, not greedy. Specifically, he says, he tells them to sell what they have and give to the poor. So he's not even like, hey, if you got a little extra cash laying around, it might be nice. He's like, no, you need to sell some stuff and give to the poor. In other words, you need to sacrifice in order to put others first. You need to use what you have, whatever that is, to love others more than you love yourself. Now, again, balance is always important when we're looking at Scripture. This doesn't mean we should sell everything and live as paupers or live on the street. Like, that's not what he's talking about. We don't see that in Scripture. We don't see that in the early church. Like, they provided for each other. They sold some stuff. They were generous, but they weren't like, you know, living with nothing. But there's still an opportunity here for us. I think a great example of this in Scripture is actually Zacchaeus. You guys remember Zacchaeus? Wee little man, right? Like, tax collector, stealing from people. All his life was all about money. And then he meets Jesus, and he gets saved. And once he gets saved, without Jesus saying anything to him, here's what Zacchaeus says back to Christ. He says, half of my goods I'm going to give to the poor. All this stuff I've accumulated, all this wealth, all this money, he's like, I know it's more than I need. I'm going to take half of what I have, and I'm going to give it to those who actually need it. And then secondly, he said, if I've defrauded anyone, if I've stolen from anybody, I'm going to give back fourfold what I stole. I'm not just going to repay them. I'm going to give them four times what I took. When he came to a place of knowing Christ, when he put his faith in Jesus, that changed his perspective. No longer was he living for himself. Now he was living for the kingdom of God. He was living for the Lord. And that changed how he thought about money and possessions and what he was going to do. It led him to be generous rather than greedy. And that's what Christ is talking about here. And here's how this works. When I truly believe that God is able to provide everything I need, it frees me up to be more generous. Because now I don't have to worry about not having enough. And so it opens my hands. Be generous, not greedy. The second thing Jesus says is to invest in eternity. He tells them here to provide themselves with a treasure in heaven. I love the language of this because sometimes I think we can get a little bit weird about this in church. Sometimes we're like, well, I don't know that we should really like be doing this to get a reward or whatever. Like Jesus just said, he's like, hey, I want you to provide for yourself treasures in heaven. This is good. This is important. He's telling us to do it. Now, last week when we studied covetousness, Jesus said, hey, earthly wealth will do you no good once you leave this life, right? Like once you leave and you like you can't take it with you, it's worthless once you leave this life. This week, Jesus is building upon that. He's saying, hey, you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead into eternity. He's telling us to use our earthly wealth for the kingdom, and in turn, as we do that, it will produce for us a treasure in heaven with him. Blessings and rewards that we will get to enjoy in the presence of the Lord for all of eternity. But notice here, he says, heavenly treasure, it cannot grow old. It cannot wear out. It cannot be stolen by thieves or destroyed by pests. This treasure is an eternal treasure that cannot be lost, and therefore it is of infinitely greater value than anything that we can get or find in this world. I was reading some stuff this week, and I came back to a book by pastor-author Randy Alcorn called The Treasure Principle. It's fairly old now, but it's really good. And I found this story in there. He was talking about this concept. He said, where we choose to store our treasures depends largely on where we think our home is. He says, suppose your home is in France, and you're visiting America for 3 months, and you're living in a hotel. And you're told that you cannot bring anything back to France with you on the plane. But you are able to send cash and deposits to your bank back home in France. Would you spend that 3 months filling your hotel room with all this expensive furniture and clothing and stuff? No, of course not. You would send your treasure back home where you can have it long term. You would only spend what you needed on your temporary residence. And the rest, you would send ahead so it would be waiting for you when you got there. He also writes it like this. He says, he who lays up treasure on earth spends his life backing away from his treasures. To him, death is loss. But he who lays up treasures in heaven looks forward to eternity. He's moving daily toward his treasure. To him, death is gain. I can't take it with me, but I can send it on ahead. And that's what Jesus is encouraging here. He said, you want to live for the kingdom? Send it on ahead where you can actually have it in your home with you forever, rather than the temporary residence. The last thing, number three, is treasure the right treasure. He says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And Jesus here, he's describing this reciprocal relationship between the heart and money. And it works like this. First of all, money follows the heart. You and I, we naturally spend our money on the things that we love, on the things that we desire, on the things that are most important to us. That's where we spend our money. That's wherever our heart is, that's where the money goes. Same thing with giving. Okay, and when I give to ministries or people or whatever, it's because my heart is in somehow connected to that or invested in that. So in one sense, money follows our heart's desires. But also, our heart follows our money. As we spend more and more on something, as we invest more and more in something, we start to care about it more, don't we? Right? It starts to become more important to us. We start to pay more attention to it. For example, if you go and you invest a lot of money in some stocks for like Walmart or something, all of a sudden, you're going to start paying a whole lot more attention to Walmart and their business practices and how they're doing and what's going on with this and that, and is, you know, the stock's going up and down. Like, you're going to give more attention to it because you've invested in it. The same thing with ministries. As we give to a church or to a nonprofit or to a missionary or to whoever, all of a sudden we're going to start paying a lot more attention to what's going on and how God is working in that ministry and how God's using that for the kingdom and for the gospel, because we've invested in it with our giving. Our heart follows where we use and spend our money. And so in this way, money is like a GPS for our heart. Our money tells our heart where to go, what to prioritize, what to love and worship. Wherever we use our money reveals both the desire of our heart and the destination of our heart. And so Jesus is saying we need to treasure the right treasures. It's interesting to me here that that word treasure that he chooses in this passage, it can be both a noun and a verb, can it? Right? So in the noun form, a treasure is something that I own that is of some worth, right? Either to me or to somebody else. But something that I treasure as a verb is something that I value, something that I find valuable, something that I love, something that maybe I even worship. And that distinction right there is the difference between earthly treasure and heavenly treasure. Earthly treasure has worth. It does. It has worth in this world. But that worth actually leads me oftentimes to worry. Worry I'm going to lose it. Worry I'm not going to have enough of it. Worry something's going to happen. Like, it, because there's worth in that thing in this world, I now worry about what's going to happen with this thing that I own that is of worth. It leads to worry. But heavenly treasure finds its worth not in itself, but in the eternal God and in his presence and in his power. And the only way I can get that heavenly treasure is if I value him, if I treasure him more than the things of this earth. It's about value more than it is about worth. But best of all, heavenly treasure never leads me to worry. If it's really heavenly treasure, it doesn't lead me to worry. It leads me to worship. To worship God here and now as I'm investing in his kingdom. And to worship God in eternity as I get there and I get to enjoy that treasure with him for the rest of time. It's about worry or worship. And so that's the big question over us this morning. I want to end with, what do I treasure? When you look at your life, when you look at how you manage what God has given you, when you look at your heart in response to those things, what do you treasure? What do you value the most? The best way maybe to kind of get to the root of that is asking a secondary question. What is your treasure producing in your heart and life? What is it that you treasure, and what is it producing in your heart? Does what I treasure bring worry or worship? That's the indicator. If what you treasure, if what you love, if what you seek after only leads to worry in your heart and in your life, you're probably treasuring the wrong things. You're probably seeking after the things of this world that can never satisfy and will ultimately be lost. And you know that, and that's why you're worried about them. But if what you treasure, what you love, what you seek leads you to worship God more and more for what he provides and who he is, then Jesus says, now you're seeking the kingdom. Now you're using what I've given you to actually lead you back to the Lord and not away from him. And this right here, friends, and when we look at this text, this is the call. This is the command for all who call themselves followers of Jesus. If that's you, if you believe you're a Christian this morning, if you believe you're following Christ, this is a command for you. He says, don't worry. Trust God to provide and live for His kingdom. That's the call. After all, if God is your Father, you got nothing to worry about.